As we enter a new decade, the question has been asked by many, is rock dead? While it's true that rock music doesn't dominate the charts and sell millions of copies like it did in its heyday, it is still very much alive as an art form. In this podcast, we'll celebrate the champions of years gone by, some of whom are still successfully plying their trade today. Possibly of even more importance, though, we'll shine a light on new acts as they struggle to gain exposure in this new age of music and look at what the future might have in store for rock. Once upon a time, people said vinyl was dead. Welcome to Episode 5, Greatest of the Greatest Hits and Soundwave Festival 2011. Inevitably, there comes a time in an artist's career when their record label decides it's time to release a Greatest Hits compilation, or, perhaps if you haven't had too many chart hits, a Best Of. In this podcast, we'll look at the greatest selling of the greatest hits, the best selling of the best ofs. We'll also look at the best new bonus tracks that were added to these compilations and went on to be hits in their own right. After that, we'll set the Wayback Machine to 2011 and the edition of that year's Soundwave Festival held at Brisbane's R&A Showgrounds.
The Wayback Machine, my incomparable invention for travelling through time, has been set for the year
2011. Let's look at total album sales. It's impossible to get exact figures due to the way sales are counted around the globe and how these have historically been recorded, with each album on this list having a tally of certified copies and a tally of claimed sales, so I'll mention both. There is an obvious leader when it comes to the best-selling greatest hits albums, and that is Eagles, their greatest hits, 1971 to 1975. It has certified sales of over 40 million worldwide. That agrees with the claim sales figure, making it not only the best-selling greatest hits album, but also one of the biggest-selling albums in the world ever. This album was the first to receive RIAA Platinum certification for sales of 1 million copies upon the introduction of this award in the US in 1976. It was the best-selling album of the 20th century in the US. Next on the list is The Beatles' One, which has performed remarkably well in the digital music era, being released in 2000 and notching up certified sales of over 23 million, edging just ahead of ABBA's Gold Greatest Hits that was released in 92. One has been claimed to be the best-selling album of the 2000s decade, or the noughties, worldwide. One claims sales of 31 million, and ABBA's record claims 30 million. It's hard to know where to place Madonna's The Immaculate Collection album on this list, as it also claims sales of 31 million, yet the certified copies figure is 19 million. Bob Marley and the Wailers' Legend The Best Of has claimed sales of 25 million, as has Queen's Greatest Hits, and this figure will no doubt increase after the recent increased exposure to Queen's music. At the time of this podcast, it sits at number 8 on the official UK album charts after spending an amazing 935 weeks on the charts. That means it will hit 18 years on the charts this week. Elton John's Greatest Hits from 74 sits just below this at 24 million. This album was Elton's first to receive RIAA Diamond certification for US sales of more than 10 million copies. All the Way, a decade of song by Celine Dion, Michael Jackson's History, Past, Present and Future, where the first of two discs is Greatest Hits, and Bon Jovi's Crossroad, all claim sales in excess of 20 million. More on Bon Jovi in our next section. To encourage hardcore fans of an artist to part with cash to purchase a bunch of tracks they already have, record labels will often add a previously unreleased bonus track or two to these compilations. Ah, they get me every time.
Shut up and take my money!
These extra tracks are often released as singles and chart well. So well, in fact, that you may have forgotten that some of the tunes I'm about to mention started life on a Greatest Hits compilation. After you've listened to this podcast, I invite you to head on over to the website, therockcurator.com, to vote for the one you like the best, and let me know if I haven't mentioned one that is a favourite of yours. Let's start with the chart successes. Bon Jovi had two big hits from Crossroad with Always and Someday I'll Be Saturday Night. Always topped the charts in Belgium, Canada, Ireland and Switzerland, peaked at number 2 in Australia and the UK, number 4 in the US and went top 10 in another 12 countries. Someday I'll Be Saturday Night went top 10 in 6 countries with a best of number 4 in Finland and it reached number 10 in Australia. Billy Joel released two hits, one major and one minor, from his Greatest Hits Volume 1 and 2 set released in 1985. You're Only Human, Second Wind and The Night Is Still Young. You're Only Human reached number 9 in the US and number 6 in Australia. The Night Is Still Young reached number 34 in the US. Bryan Adams' Please Forgive Me comes from his late 93 release So Far, So Good. It topped the charts in Australia, Belgium, Canada, France, Ireland, Norway, Portugal, was number 2 in the UK, 7 in the US, and top 3 in another 9 countries. Clearly, I'm in a minority here, but that would be amongst my least favourite Bryan Adams songs. I will forgive you for this one, Bryan, but I won't forgive you for Have You Ever Really Loved a Woman? Or I Finally Found Someone. You need to remember this, Bryan. Sweetest Thing by U2 was originally the B-side to Where the Streets Have No Name, but was later re-recorded and released as a single for the album The Best Of 1980 to 1990, and it became a hit. It was number 1 in Ireland, Canada, Poland and Iceland, and top 10 in several countries, Australia, where it reached number 6, Austria, Denmark, Finland, Greece, Hungary, Italy, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Scotland, Spain, Sweden and the UK. Whew. Others with some degree of chart success include Lenny Kravitz, again was number 1 in Iceland and Italy, number 4 in the US and had another 6 top 10 positions. The Cars, Tonight She Comes, reached number 7 in the US and number 16 in Australia. Def Leppard, When Love and Hate Collide, was number 1 in Ireland, number 2 in the UK, number 3 in Scotland and number 6 in Canada. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Mary Jane's Last Dance, reached number 5 in Canada and number 14 in the US. ZZ Top's cover of Viva Las Vegas reached number 8 in Ireland and number 10 in the UK. Some other examples that weren't big hits, but there's some great tracks in this list. Aerosmith, Walk on Water, Blind Man and Devil's Got a New Disguise. Alice in Chains, Get Born Again, which was nominated for a Grammy for Best Hard Rock Performance. Foo Fighters, Wheels. Motley Crue, Primal Scream. Red Hot Chili Peppers, Fortune Faded. And last but not least, 311's cover of The Cure's Love Song, as featured on the movie 50 First Dates, as well as their greatest hits 93-03. And now on to the second part of our podcast, Soundwave Festival 2011. I retain certain memories from Soundwave 2011, as I tend to with any concert, but sometimes your memory needs prompting, and fortunately I took notes that day.
I've got the memory of an elephant. I remember one time I went to the zoo and saw an elephant.
I attended 4 Soundwave festivals in 2010, 11, 14 and 15, all of them in Brisbane, and all boasting stellar lineups. The biggest challenge with these types of festivals is managing timing clashes between 2 artists that you want to watch. You either have to pick one and commit, or aim to see part of each set and plan your movement between the 2 stages. Soundwave's dual side-by-side main stages set up work beautifully, and unless there were performers you need to see in another area, you could base yourself near the main stages and catch sets on an alternating basis. Here's who I watched that day, what my opinion of their set was, and what they are up to 10 years later. First up was Feeder, not very well known in Australia outside of perhaps the song Buck Rogers, a number 5 hit in their native UK. They have had 20 UK top 40s. My comments were, enjoyable straight ahead rock, a little like Foo Fighters, and the highlight of the set was Down to the River. Feeder has released another 3 albums in the intervening years, with the most recent being in 2019, the same year they were inducted into Kerrang! Magazine's Hall of Fame. Next up on the other main stage was Monster Magnet. They started slowly and I was a little underwhelmed, but they finished strongly with the last 2 songs being the tunes of theirs I, and I would say most of the crowd, were familiar with, Power Trip and Space Lord. Four-fifths of the lineup that played that day are still in the band, led by main man Dave Windorf. They are currently working on their 11th studio album. The only time I strayed from the 2 main stages was to see the Gaslight Anthem. My notes read, Springsteen-like Americana with a slight punk edge. Devoted following at smaller stage. Could be big. One to watch. At the time, they were sending the rock letter with patronage from the boss himself, Bruce Springsteen, who had played with them at the Glastonbury Festival and London's Hard Rock Calling Festival in 2009. On both occasions, the Gaslight Anthems lead singer Brian Fallon performed with Springsteen during his headlining set. They had three albums out at the time at the Soundwave Festival, the most recent, American Slang, reaching number 16 on the US charts. Fourth album, Handwritten, was released in 2012 and it found them an audience around the world. Number one in Scotland, number two in the UK and Germany, number three in the US and the Netherlands, and another six top 20 positions, including number 14 in Australia. Fifth and final album, Get Hurt, achieved similar figures in 2014, but in July 2015, the band announced an indefinite hiatus, which has since only been broken by some shows in 2018 to honour the 10th anniversary of their second album, The 59 Sound. I highly recommend this band to you and hope that they do return one day. From there, it was back to the main stage setup for Stone Sour. Stone Sour was founded by Corey Taylor, who later became the vocalist of Slipknot. They've released six albums to date, with the most recent in 2017, and they released three of these by 2011. The most recent at that time, titled Audio Secrecy, debuted at number six on the US charts. I wrote of their performance that they are quite proficient, but I found the distinction between their slamming, powerful rock and the radio-friendly, quieter sound of songs like recent single Hesitate a bit too much of a variation. It was now early afternoon on a beautiful sunny Brisbane day when Primus took the stage with a backdrop of two large inflatable astronauts. As expected, they are extremely technically proficient and quite entertaining, and also, as expected, slightly weird. Their songs were lengthy, with the set consisting of just seven tunes. Disappointingly, quite a few of their best-known songs weren't included, such as Winona's Big Brown Beaver, My Name is Mud, or Mr. Crinkle. One for the hardcore Primus fans only. Primus released their ninth studio album in 2017 and was still touring as recently as late 2019. Next came the undoubted highlight of the day, the one, the only, Saul Hudson, better known as Slash, of Guns N' Roses. 2011 was just after his album was released, featuring a number of guest vocalists, one of whom was Miles Kennedy, and before the band on stage that day became his official long-term collaborators known as Miles Kennedy and The Conspirators. They have since released three albums using this moniker. Material from the solo album, Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver, are all handled beautifully. I wrote that Miles Kennedy on vocals is a star and that they are a great band, having fun. Slash's solos were rocking and perfect. Mid-afternoon slots can be tricky, but when it's a beautiful sunny day and the great tunes are hitting you, who needs lights and effects? Paradise City was an amazing closer. Slash is currently back touring the world with Guns N' Roses. I look forward to seeing him and the rest of the crew in November. Slash was always going to be a tough act to follow, and we went from Slash to a Slashy, an actor-slash-singer, Jared Leto of 30 Seconds to Mars. He had great crowd interaction and looked very much like a movie star on the big screens. My comments were that they didn't blow me away, but they weren't bad. And as far as a rock band featuring a movie star, they're quite a bit ahead of Dogstar featuring Keanu Reeves, who I saw open for Bon Jovi. Sorry, Keanu. They've released five albums to date, with just two since 2009, so very much a part-time endeavour for Jared, but I'm sure an enjoyable one. They were followed by One Day as a Lion. Who, I hear you ask? Unless you're a big Rage Against the Machine fan, you may well not have heard of this duo featuring frontman Zach De La Rocca and the excellent drummer John Theodore, who is currently a member of Queens of the Stone Age. They released an EP in 2008 and toured through until 2011, but don't appear to be a going concern these days. An interesting choice for so high on the bill, I thought, especially with Slash playing earlier. One Day as a Lion took us into early evening, and as it turned tonight, it was time for Queens of the Stone Age. I had viewed the previous set close to the right-hand side main stage that Queens were about to play on, rather than the left-hand side that One Day as a Lion were on, to make sure I was in a good viewing position. During opening number Sick, 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 I decided this wasn't such a great idea, as the crowd started to surge and bump me around. I had gone through something similar at a Pearl Jam concert in 1995. On that occasion, I was lifted off the ground, my feet not contacting terra firma, and I was worried back then that if I fell, a whole heap of people could be coming down on top of me. So over 15 years later, I was definitely too old for that shit. I retreated to a safer vantage point and enjoyed the rest of the set. It was a beautifully weighted set list with two tracks from the self-titled debut, three from follow-up Rated R, two from Songs for the Deaf, four from Lullabies to Paralyze, and two from the most recent album at the time, Era Vulgaris, which came out in 2007. My favourite tracks were two biggies from the excellent Songs for the Deaf album, Go With the Flow and No One Knows, which was a great track to close with. I also enjoyed Avon from the first album. They've released two albums since then, like Clockwork in 2013 that I loved and awarded my album of the year, and Villains in 2017 that I wasn't so keen on. They must just about be due for a new one. Last but not least, the headliners, Iron Maiden. Scream for me, Brisbane! I must admit here that I'm not the biggest Iron Maiden fan in the world. I understand their appeal and they have some good tunes, but for some reason I haven't quite fallen for them. Sometimes seeing bands live gives you a whole new appreciation, though, and I went into watching them with an open mind. I was hoping to hear some of the singles that I know, like Run to the Hills, Can I Play with Madness, and Aces High, but none of these were featured. I did know a few of the tracks played, such as The Trooper, The Evil That Men Do, and The Number of the Beast, but wasn't familiar with the recently released The Final Frontier album, which made up 5 of the 16 tracks, and importantly 4 of the first 5 tracks, so they finished strongly, but had lost me a bit by then. All in all, it was a great day of entertainment and excellent value for the price of the ticket. So with the final notes played, I walked out of the venue with my all-black t-shirt wearing brothers and sisters and made my way in the balmy Brisbane evening back to the hotel to catch up with my wife Tina for a drink and to give her my review of the day's activities. Now it's time to travel back to 2021, and we might skip that pesky 2020 on the way. Probably a great treat for hardcore fans that hadn't heard the new tunes live before, but save that for the sideshows when you got a longer set, I say. Shortened festival sets should be close to a run-through of greatest hits, in my opinion, as you're playing to not only your fans, but fans of other bands on the lineup.